Second Samuel. We'll start at the end of chapter 12 tonight, and then we will hop into chapter 13. I'm just going to be honest with you. This is a awkward passage because of the content. And so we're going to cover the content, and I'll try to be as unawkward as we can. 2 Samuel chapter 12, we're going to finish up verses 26 through 31. And Joab fought against Rabbah of the children of Ammon and took the royal city. So this battle is the battle that he should have been a part of in chapter 11, when the kings went forth to battle. It's speculated that this battle could have been going as long as 2 years. And so Joab is there fighting. And verse 27, Joab sent messengers to David and said, "I have fought against Rabbah and I have taken the city of waters. Now, therefore, gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name." And David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah and fought against it and took it. And he took their king's crown from off his head, the weight whereof was a talent of gold with the precious stones, and it was set on David's head, and he wrought forth the spoil of the city in great abundance. And he brought forth the people that were therein, and put them under saws, and under harrows of iron, under axes of iron, and made them pass through the brick kiln. And you think that our warfare is graphic. He's burning people alive. "And thus did he unto all the cities of the children of Ammon. So David and all the people returned unto Jerusalem." So this is the personal relationship of Joab and David is what I want to look at and give you three things on this. It's so easy to read through all of this narrative, and we all have David in a certain place in our heads, right? Like he fits a certain spot, except that these guys were human. And when you get into this context, you got to realize Joab, every time he is seeing David, he's thinking of one thing. And so this relationship, which was really good, is now the most awkward thing that could ever exist. It's just terrible. Why? Because someone knows something about the other one that could ruin the other person's life, and they're just playing this game back and forth. Notice in verse 26, the faithfulness to the fight. Joab, in spite of knowing the information, is faithful. And that's a good attribute. Just because you know the dirt, it doesn't mean that it's your job, right? Now, we'll get into some context in the next chapter. You definitely have a point of which you need to act upon some things. But just because you happen to know something, if that was the case, then every pastor in America could ruin a whole bunch of people's lives. Just because people are struggling with some things, getting through some things, it doesn't mean that. So Joab is still doing the job that he's supposed to do and is faithful to it. But notice the feigning of what I would call a friendship in verses 27 and 28. He reaches out to him and says, "Hey, come take this city because I don't want to take it and have it be mine." You imagine how awkward that arrival of David and the rest of the people were? Because they haven't seen each other to this point since David sent Uriah with the letter. And this is their first meeting. And they're going to have a great victory together. No, humanly, that's really awkward. Humanly, that's just horrible. Humanly, there's not great conversation going on. They're not sitting around a campfire, around coffee, just enjoying time together. They're not. It's just not there. Notice verses 29 through 31. There's failures in David's life, yet there is repentance, which is why he's able to come. He repented in chapter 12. He took care of everything between him and the Lord, and he's able to come, and God gives him this victory with the spoil in verse 30. And that is the thing in David's life that keeps him going with God. When he's wrong, he gets his heart right. He makes it right. He pushes forward. He doesn't just stay where he's at. He doesn't just take, he takes his lumps, but he just doesn't quit then. He keeps rolling forward. So that personal relationship will get worse the further we go into 2 Samuel. But 2 Samuel chapter 13 verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after this," so after that great victory, that Absalom the son of David had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon the son of David loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. So we're going to break this down into three things. Amnon's sin, Tamar's sorrow, and then David's settlement. David knows he has fourfold coming, and he knows that because he's the one that decreed his own punishment. He's the one that said the rich man was going to pay back the lamb fourfold. So we know he's already had payment number one, right? Installment number one has taken place in chapter 12. And installment number two is about to take place in this chapter. I've entitled this tonight, Family Fight Night. Because that's what's about to take place. A man by the name of John Butler said this, the bitter fruits of David's adulterous sin now begin to multiply for him with a series of atrocities striking hard upon his family. I believe there are some things that in your life that God will help you through and God will help you past. But there are some other things God is going to bring some fruit forth in your life on. It's the way that God is going to take care of it. And what's interesting is we need to leave that stuff up to the Lord. There are some positions you can no longer have, yes, with certain sin in your life. But it is not my job to rain down the fire from heaven. It is God's job to take care of that. And God is about to do that in this man's life. So this is Amnon's sin. Let's talk about the scheming in verses 1 through 5. The scheming in verses 1 through 5. You ever schemed for your sin? You don't have to raise your hand. I know it's true because you're human. But this sin just hits us bad, doesn't it? Like even those first two verses just make you feel gross. All over. The scheming, under scheming number one, notice the foul love in verse number one. It says, "And after it came to pass that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her." Now, that's not the love that you have for your sister. We're not talking about that. And so it's very, very foul. Very, very foul. Notice verse 2, Amnon was so, what's the next word? Vexed. I studied that today. I think I found one time in the Bible where the word vex had a good backing behind it, where the Lord was vexing an enemy. Everything else is not good. Vexing is not a good thing. It does not land well. Solomon uses it over and over in Ecclesiastes, and it's all vexation. It's just horrible. It's terrible. It's bad. So him being so vexed for her isn't a good thing. It means to irritate, to plague, to disturb, to trouble, to persecute. But he was so full of this that he couldn't see past the fact that it was bad. You also have to bring into play with everything of just how people lived and culture of the day. If you talk about marrying your sister now, we're going to throw two states at you probably. We're going to throw West Virginia and Kentucky at you. That's the ongoing joke. But in this time frame, in the culture, this is his half sister. She even admits later in the passage that if he would have just went to the king, he probably would have gave his blessing. And culturally, that's weird to me. Half sister or not, it's still half. It's not the half-not sister, it's the half-full, the half-part sister that greatly, greatly bothers me. But notice, Amnon in verse 2 was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And Amnon, notice this phrase, thought it hard for him to do anything to her. So not only was it a foul love, but it was a foul love because of a foul fault life. He thought it hard, but he didn't think it was impossible. When he's thinking it is hard, he's finding it difficult to make it happen for himself. He couldn't quite make the circumstances fit. But he was thinking about it. This was consuming him. This was taking up everything. How do we know that? Well, because of the foul sickness in verse 2. He fell sick for his sister Tamar. Notice verse 4. Jonadab asked him, "Why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day?" Other people are noticing, hey, you're losing weight. You don't look good. Even before he's fully into the sin physically, just the mental part of the sin is taking a toll on his physical body. Sin will take what it wants and leave you destitute. And the mental side of sin is something that we have laid aside as not a big deal in this culture. It is inside my head. It is none of your business. It's God's business, though. And you will reap things of your thought life. His thought life was foul. His sickness was foul. But notice the foul friendship he had in verse 3. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. So this is his cousin, in all actuality. This is someone that he's very, very, very close to. He asked him in verse 4, "Why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me?" And Amnon said unto him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." I don't know if this is the first time that he said this or the first time that he's publicly made this known. But if it is, that may have been a difficult thing for him to say out loud because he'd never said it to anybody before. But it didn't make it right. It just means he's that much more bold in what he's about to do. And then notice the help that Jonadab gives him. See, he thought it hard. He couldn't scheme correctly to get it done. But Jonadab is about to swoop in and help him in verse 5. He said, "Lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick," which shouldn't be hard because he was already sick. "And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight that I may see and eat it at her hand." Notice not only the scheming in this, but notice the strike in verses 6 through 14. The feigned sickness in verse 6. So he not only is noticeably sick, but now he has, in everyone else's mind, made this worse in verse 6. So he took Jonadab's advice and lay him down and made himself sick. You ever have a kid try to make themselves sick so they can stay home from school? It used to be, years ago, you could hold the thermometer up to the light, right, and make that mercury jump up. Yeah, a little bit more difficult to pull off nowadays. But it is something that we do when we want to get what we want. I'm just not feeling bad today, or I'm not feeling good today. That's too bad. You're going to have to go. That was always what I heard. Unless my fever was over 101 and I was vomiting, you're going. It doesn't matter where it's at. There you are. Had a terrible childhood. Deception is a big part of unholy conduct. You don't find deception too much in God's workings of what he's trying to fulfill good things in people's life. God doesn't have to be deceiving. God is very forthright. And Jonadab is helping Amnon be deceptive. Verse 6, "And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar, my sister, come and make me a cup of cakes in my sight that I may eat at her hand. Then David sent him to Tamar, saying, Go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat." Also note, this is David's eldest son as well. So we know how that works. The eldest is generally the favorite, right? Now, all you oldest don't get mad. But that's how it works. That's okay. Or in my family's case, the oldest son is the favorite. And Paul, if you ever watch this, I'm talking about you. Verse 7, "Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, Go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down. She took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes." The only thing, so right now as I'm reading this, he's creeping me out right now. Because he's pretending he's sick, watching her cook. And you're just starting to dwell on it now. I've been dwelling on this all day, and this just really irritated me every time I read through that. Notice the false front that he pushes forward. He makes this into quite a thing. Notice the components in this in verses 7 through 9. He has to ask the king. The king then has to command Tamar to come do it, and Tamar has to agree to come and cook for him. And she comes out of innocency. She has no clue at all. I speculate, because of what we're about to see, whether David knew it or not. Because Absalom's about to say something in a few verses that makes me wonder whether David had a little inkling of this or not, or maybe he was just ignoring it. So verses 7 through 9, those components come into play. Verse 9, she took a pan, poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have out all the men from me. There's, you know, red flashing light number one. And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring the meat into the chamber that I may eat of thy hand. And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. So here is the total creepiness package. This chamber in an Eastern house setting is furnished with a slightly elevated platform, and the bed was generally on that, and there was the draping of all that stuff. So this setup was just the bedroom setting. And in this bed chamber, generally for a man like this, the males would all sleep in one area and the ladies would all be in another. That was just the culture of this time period. So he's bringing her into a place that was very, very private to him and that family setting of men. So he is breaking all kinds of boundaries to make this happen. So this false front goes into the folly and the forcing in verses 11 through 14. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come lie with me, my sister. And she answered him, nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. Howbeit he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. Folly is an absurd act, which is highly sinful. Any conduct contrary to the laws of God or man, it is sin, it is scandalous crimes. It is that which violates moral precepts and dishonors the offender. And she is not bothered by him. She is not in any way, she doesn't feel lower than him. She straight up calls him out. In verse 12, she just tells him no. Why? Because this is folly. This isn't something that you should do. And then phrases it in two different ways in verse 13. Where am I going to go? And you're going to be a fool when this is all done. She sees the end of it. He's just thinking about what he's been thinking about. And that's all that he can think about. Solomon said in Proverbs 17, verse 12, let a bear robbed of her whelps meet a man rather than a fool in his folly. It is better for you to meet an angry mother bear who's looking for the cubs than for you to run into Amnon and his folly. In other words, there may be a defense against the bear. You may be able to get away from that, but you won't from him. He is completely locked in. He is completely going to make this happen. In verse 12, notice the plea that she gives him. And having daughters, this strikes very close to my heart. She is begging, don't do this. Notice the prayer in verse 13. She said, now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. And that doesn't mean that she was even interested. She just knew what was about to happen was going to be sin before God, and she wanted nothing to do with that. But notice the power in verse 14. Him and his folly ignored everything, and because he was stronger, forced her and lay with her. That's Amnon's sin. That's what he sat around thinking about, fantasizing about, dreaming about, trying to scheme and figure out. And without Jonadab's help, I wonder if he ever would have pulled it off. Don't know. But Jonadab sure had a big hand in verse 5 in making it all happen. Let's talk about Tamar's sorrow. Then verse 15, then Amnon, what did he do? Hated her exceedingly. So that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. And she said unto him, this is an amazing phrase for what just happened to her. There is no cause. She still wants him to do the right thing. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called a servant that ministered unto him and said, put now this woman out from me, and bolt the door after her. In this sorrow, number one, there's the dissatisfaction of the infatuated. He's not a Christian, he's a Jew, but Dr. Michael Brown said this, sin will never satisfy. In the end, the happiness becomes sadness, the thrill becomes a nightmare, the pleasure becomes an addiction. Sin never keeps its promises. And it's just how it works. And it's sad when you watch it take place, when you're surprised. Have you in your adult life just been surprised? Didn't see it coming in someone else's life? We're blown away. It's sad when it happens. But it happens because there's an uncontrolled thought life. And we think because we come to church and because we have a Bible and because we've been in church our whole life that all that's not good enough. You better be in control of your thoughts. You better be in control of what goes in and out of your mind. Matthew 5:28, Jesus said, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Jesus takes it to the next level for us. You don't even have to go to the action itself. The lust within you will be enough. Notice in verse 15, the disappointment exceeded the delight. The hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. What is that? That's the perfect description of sin. Whatever you think sin's going to give, it's never going to give. Sin never yields. If you're a farmer and sin was a choice to plant in your field, it's not a good choice. The yield on that is not going to be good. Now they've got it. If you're, I'm weird. You can ask my wife. I watch farmers on YouTube, so I love it. They're harvesting wheat and they've got everything's computerized. They know what their yields are as they're bringing in their wheat and their corn. It's so cool. I wouldn't want to pay for the technology, but they do. And it's really cool to watch. I don't have to pay for it. But sin will never yield that. Notice in verse 16, the dishonor exceeded the honor. She's still pleading. There is no cause for this. This can still be okay. This can still be all right. You don't have to be the fool. And he won't listen. And in verse 17, the dissatisfaction exceeded the devotion. Remember in verse 2, this is the girl he said that he fell sick for. This is the girl that he's so vexed for. This is everything that he's ever wanted, right? Except that what was up in here was an actual reality. And that's the issue with it. Hollywood's descriptions are never accurate and good. They're always tainted. Be careful of that thought life. Well, I wouldn't. Yeah, we would. Let's just be honest. We would. If I could see in your head and you could see in my head, we wouldn't be talking to each other. Why? Because we're wicked. That's why. Well, I wouldn't do what Jonadab. If you stayed on it as long as Jonadab stayed on it and had opportunity, we would. Let's just be honest. We would. I know that's difficult to say, but we would. Notice in verses 16 through 22, the defaming of the innocent. She mentions it in verse 13. Whither shall I cause my shame to go? But that's the only question she asked him. The rest of verse 13 and then in verse 16. She is just asking for him to do the right thing. She's actually the one that takes the biggest fall on this. It's not so in our society now to be a virgin. That's not a big deal at all. It's actually shameful now. You can get ridiculed for that now. But here in this culture, that was everything for a young lady. They had their own house that they all lived in. They had their own colors, as we're about to see, that they wore. It was a very distinct, honorable thing. And he took it. Notice in verse 18, and she had a garment of diverse colors upon her. For with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the doors after her. Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her and laid her hand upon her head and went out what? Crying. Her life to never be the same. Whatever hopes and dreams she had, now gone. Now she's the shamed. Great lesson in my sin doesn't always just affect me. My actions don't always just affect me. Well, my kids would never, I wouldn't say that. They may. It depends on what an example you are. The defaming of the innocent, she has noticed that innocence within in verse 16 is lost. The innocence without, with her colors, are now gone in verse 18. It's just a horrible story. Say, God, why would you put this in here? Because there's lessons to be learned. There's great lessons to be learned. And I know we're adults and we're all past that kind of stuff, except the fact that we're not. You start talking to the right person at work and you could ruin your marriage in a matter of 2 months. It is all possible. You start talking to the right person on Facebook. We had a weird, it was a second house that they sold for us, the realtors they sold. Anyways, they sold the house for us. They were a Christian couple, really nice, blah, blah, blah. So we invited them to the veterans dinner, and I was talking to him, and he said that she had left. I'm like, oh, well, where did she go? I don't know. Found an old high school friend on Facebook and just left me. I had a 16-year-old boy and an 18-year-old boy still at home. Just gone. But we're all past that. We're not past that. You let this go, and anything's possible. We all get disappointed when you hear a missionary messes up, a pastor messes up, right? That's great disappointment. And I don't even care what denomination we're in. When I heard about Ravi Zacharias, I thought, Lord, we didn't need that. We didn't need that. Sorry, well, he's not. We didn't need that. You know, the world doesn't have distinctions when they say Christians. We realize this, right? I'm not saying that I'm agreeing with what he's teaching. I'm saying this. Here's a guy the world thinks is a Christian. I'm calling myself a Christian. Oh, so that guy that you follow, I don't follow him, but they don't know that. When they mess up, that is devastating. How did it happen? Thought life. Thought life turned into action, and then he was big enough and he thought he could get away with it. Notice in verses 19 and 20, the innocence wasted. So she leaves, puts ashes on her head, rends that garment of diverse colors. Verse 20, Absalom, her brother, said unto her, notice this question. Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? How in the world would he know that? But hold now thy peace, my sister, he is thy brother, regard not this thing. So Tamar remained, what's the word? Desolate in her brother Absalom's house. Paul said it this way, but if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. You know what Amnon was doing? He was just sitting there burning every day, just burning in lust. John Butler puts it this way. Then evil passions are allowed to burn out of control. They will leave ashes all over society. Ashes of character, of health, of peace, of purity, of happiness, of prospects. Just wasted innocence. Sad for her. She now is alone and destitute. Desolate. Why? Well, because one person had to have what they wanted. Nothing else. There's no love here. All there is just unbridled desire. Just the desires of an animal. It's all that it was. But let's look at what Absalom said. That strikes me. This is the ignoring of the innocent in verse 20. Her innocence was wasted, yeah, but she was ignored. The question that he asked, "Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee?" What in the world? What inclination would he have had? What path would he have had? I'll tell you how he would have known. It's his brother. Aren't there certain things about your brother that you just know? With conversations. He's weird. Do you think Amnon was just a fun guy to be around with this whole thing just burning inside of him? You don't think there were weird glances at family dinners? Come on, this would be weird. This would be honest about it, right? Just lusty looks across the room at her, and Absalom's picking up on all this stuff. She had been ignored. The immoral character to this point was known. Absalom at minimum knew who he was, and he knew what he wanted, and he knew what he was capable of. I can't prove to you that David did, but if Absalom did, man, I've got a sneaking suspicion David did as well. Notice the immoral act ignored in verse 20. The phrase that "Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee" is amazing, but his next phrase is even more amazing. "But hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing." What in the world? What are we doing? We have been hurt in Baptist circles by things that have just been brushed under the rug, by things that have not been regarded when they were needed to be regarded. There are just certain things as a pastor in my position that if I'm a part of, I am out. I am gone. You don't even have to ask me. You say, "Well, God's forgiving." Yeah, God is forgiving. But this position comes with some expectations from God. And if they're not upheld, I don't care how big the guy is, he needs to go. Needs to go. Notice the immoral character ignored in verse 22. Absalom, here's how he deals with Amnon. "Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad." Why? For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. Notice as well in this defaming of the innocent that the incensed yet idle about the innocent. Verse 21. We skipped it on purpose. And notice the great reaction of Dad. I'm not even going to say the king. Just notice the reaction of Dad. And if you can, when I'm done reading, just a big round of applause for him is what I've had in my head all day long. "But when David heard of all these things, he was very wroth." That's it? That's all you got going? You got nothing else? There's nothing rolling through? You don't have a plan? I know we didn't load things back in these days, but you didn't sharpen anything? Right? Dad's in the room, right? Or no, should we just brush it under the rug? He just ignores it. But he was mad, though. I'm telling you this. Mark her down. Dave, he was mad. I don't know if that gets him brownie points in somewhere. But he was mad about it. That's for sure. Good. Sorry for the sarcasm, but I just don't know what else to say. That verse just, I can't even wrap my head around it. The only thing you thought to do as a dad and as a king is to just get mad. When you roll back to 2 Samuel chapter 1 and the kid comes in who wants payment for Saul's death. And what is his reaction then? Fall on him. And he dies. But this pervert takes your daughter's innocence, and all you can do is, "Well, I'm real upset about it." I'll tell you that right now. I've made notes. We're going to take care of it. You know what it shows? It shows David's condition. So, mom and dad, we got to be careful of what you allow into your life, because just because it was in your life at one point, or maybe you're struggling with something, that does not give your children access to that same highway. And you know what David is doing? David is staring himself in the face. And he doesn't know what to do with it. He's wroth. Why? Well, he was mad at himself back in chapter 12. And he may also be realizing that God is beginning to work in not a good way. The insensate idol about the innocent, as we've said, his inadequate reaction. Why? Because of Leviticus 20, verse 17. If a man shall take his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, and see her nakedness, and she see his nakedness, it is a wicked thing. And they shall be cut off. And that doesn't mean just cut off in a house all by themselves. No, they're supposed to die in the sight of these people. He hath uncovered his sister's nakedness. He shall bear his iniquity. That was God's thoughts. And he didn't do it. Why? Because he had to stone himself too. We got to be careful, moms and dads. We have to be careful. I've heard this phrase before. Well, you know, I got saved later, and so I was just doing way worse things at their age. No, 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 and double no. You better know what your boundaries are biblically. You better know what you believe. And sometimes I think that's our issue. We don't know what we believe. And then they get to the teenage years and we get taken off guard. I've said it for years. If you don't know how to control the phone or the computer, don't have it in your house. They shouldn't be instructing you on how to use it. Why? You think they're getting away with something? Yes, I do. I've personally caught them. Amen. Those are awkward conversations with parents. Hey, there's this. No, there's not. Okay, well, let me pull it up here for you. There it is. Oh. What is that? That's having something in your home that you don't know how to use. Be careful. His inadequate reaction. And then, as I said, his indulgent reaction. Why? An expositor by the name of Blakey said this: it is those whose hands are clean that can rebuke the offender. Let others try to administer reproof, and their own hearts will condemn them, and they will shrink from the task. David can't condemn him. Why? Because he'd have to condemn himself. And he won't do it. You can mark it down that leniency in punishing crime, be it at home, school, church, or in the courts, reflects a sin problem in the lives of those who are lenient in dealing with the evil. If it's evil, if it's sin, if God calls it sin, it needs to be dealt with. Is it comfortable? No, it's not comfortable. Is it enjoyable? No, it's not enjoyable. But David's responsibility in this moment was to take care of his son in not a good way. I'm not saying that I'm just signing up to stone one of my sons to death. But David didn't do it. Why? Because he knew he was just as guilty. Him and Samuel both had the same issue. They couldn't discipline their own kids. Eli, for that matter. That was Tamar's sorrow. Let's look at David's settlement. Reminding you that in 12:6, he said he was supposed to restore that lamb fourfold. We've had installment one. Verse 23. Came to pass after how long? 2 full years. How awkward is that? How weird is that? Talk about not talking about the elephant that's in the room. Or maybe just not talking to anybody. That's very possible. Came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. Okay, so this is just how I read the Bible. I read that sometimes and I think, oh yeah, over there by that thing, Lord. I have no idea where that's at, Lord. Oh, it's by the sheep shears in Baal Hazor. Oh yeah, I know where that's by that, right there by the other stuff, by that thing over there. No, I have no idea. Get a map, look it up, you can see it. Verse 24, Absalom came to the king and said, behold now, thy servant hath sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. And the king said to Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. Then said Absalom, so this is the kid who's coming to ask the thing, but he doesn't want to ask the thing, so he asks the other thing so he can get to the thing. Right? This is what's happening. Absalom wants Amnon there so that he can cut his head off. But if he knows, he goes in and says, hey, I was hoping to cut off Amnon's head today, so if you could just send him, it'd be great. Instead, he wants to have a family picnic, right? Those are nice. like a nice family reunion after these wonderful 2 years of joy that we've shared together. Let's have a family picnic. Verse 26, and then said Absalom, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. We're pals, you know. We're together all the time. And the king said unto him, why should he go with thee? He knows. He knows exactly why he's asking. But Absalom did what? Verse 27. He pressed him. You know what Absalom had? He had the keys to dad's heart. Absalom was the kid who went in to get what everybody else wanted. At our home, her name is McKenna. If they want something, they send her in. And generally speaking, they shall obtain what they're looking for. And they're smart and they know this, though. But verse 27, Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's son go with him. Now Absalom had commanded his servant, saying, mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. Here's David's settlement. Notice the perpetrator of the settlement. I thought this as I was reading this today. I was raised on Westerns. I'm trying to raise my kids the same way. Watched Shane the other evening. That's just a classic. That's a classic right there. And I thought this makes a really good Western. You have bitterness, revenge, and wine. And so like all those elements, and like in every, at minimum, bitterness and revenge. You have to have those. But my kids are picking up on the fact of, Dad, this is like the same thing. I'm like, no, it's not. It's different people. The other one was in Colorado. This is Wyoming. It's a total different town. Different horses. No, Dad, it's the same thing. I'm like, no, it's not. Stop. Notice his planned settlement, verses 22 through 27. Absalom knew what he was going to do. So he pressed for it, as we mentioned in verse 28. 2 years he had to plan for this. And unlike Amnon, with Absalom's thought life of plotting a murder, he didn't need Jonadab's help to pull it off. He was capable all on his own. And then notice the precise settlement, verses 29 through 30. Verse 29 says, but the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man gat him up upon his mule and fled. And it came to pass while they were in the way that tidings came to David saying, Absalom has slain all the king's sons, and there is not one of them left. John Butler says, evil loves to encourage folks to sin by cloaking it in noble garments. Absalom says to his servants in verse 28, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. Absalom is just a conniver, and it's only going to get worse. Absalom is just in love with himself and gets revenge. David pays payment number two in his fourfold. Amnon loses his life. The news gets to David in verse 30, but the news gets to him a little bad in this perils of the settlement in verses 29 to 31. In this perils of the settlement, notice in verse 29, there's utter chaos. There's utter chaos because this was a common practice for whoever was about to take over the kingdom just to kill everybody else so that he had no issues. This happens all the time. So Amnon goes down and all the rest of the brothers are like, you know what? We gotta go right now. And so whoever saw it either was confused in verse 30, the utter confusion with all of that going on. And David hears that Absalom has killed everybody. And I got to wonder in that moment, even though he's devastated in verse 31, did it actually shock him? Because of what he said to him back in verse 26. Why should he go with thee? He knows what he's thinking. He knows what his thoughts of his sister are. Verse 31, then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent. The utter contrition in verse 31. Sincere penitence or remorse. His worst nightmare, he thinks. except that it's not
yet.
Notice verse 32, who shows up? And what's the next word? Jonadab shows up. The silver-tongued devil. The man who knows what to say and when to say it. He was such a help to Amnon that he decides to come and help David in his time of grief. The patron of the settlement. Jonadab means free giver or liberality. Remember in verse 3, the Bible called him a very subtle man, Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. His soothing words in verses 32 through 35, Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother, answered and said, Not my lord suppose that they have slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. For by the appointment of Absalom, this hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Now therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart, to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. But Absalom fled, and the young men that kept the watch lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said unto the king, Behold, the king's sons come, as thy servant said, so it is. Jonadab is setting himself up into a place of prominence. He's smooth. He's kind. I'm here to help you, and he is not. He is here to get what he can get. That's all that he's there for. The pains of the settlement or the sorrow in verse 36, and then the separation in verses 37 through 39. Absalom flees in verse 37 and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur, which is where his mother is from. And David mourned for his son. How long? Every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there how long? 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. The sorrow in verse 36, he grieves with his sons over Amnon. But he has a place in his heart for Absalom. Joab's going to pop up in the next chapter. And Joab's going to use that against him. Why? Well, because Joab got a letter that said, you need to put your eye in the front of the battle. And now that tussle is going to begin to go back and forth. And so David's paid 2 installments, yeah. But it's about to get worse. I'm going to give you a thought. Between David and Absalom and their murders, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Let's look at these comparisons. Number one, in death, Uriah is murdered because of sexual sin. Amnon is murdered because of sexual sin. In drinking, Uriah is given wine by David. Amnon is drunk when he's murdered. Darkness, Uriah carries his own death warrant. David doesn't know of Absalom's plans. Deputizing, David hired Joab. Absalom inspired his servants. In the departure, Uriah's home is devastated by David. David's home is devastated by Absalom. We won't get away with it. It doesn't matter how much you plan or how much you scheme. You say, that was a horrible chapter. I know. Terrible. But a good reminder that we're just flesh. And up here, we got to be careful. That whole chapter is based on the mind and the uncontrolled mind. And thoughts that just go where they want and land where they want. And God says, no, you can't do that. Bringing into captivity every thought. That is our job. And Amnon let that go. And he paid for it. David paid for it. So if I can encourage you out of that chapter, control that thought life. If let go, It can devastate not just your life, but the life of those that come behind you. Maybe not this, but maybe the grandkids. Keep it under control. Father, we're thankful for the evening, thankful for the chapter. God, pray that we'd learn something from it. Take something from it. It's an awkward one, Lord. We understand that. But Father, you put it in your word. God, I pray you'd help us to view it and to see it. God, is the help that you would have us to have. In Jesus' name, amen.